This is the NedGroup Investments podcast, where we explore a variety of views and insights that investors care about.
Welcome back, everyone. My name is Anil Jagmohan, Senior Investment Analyst here at NedGroup Investments. And for the final part in our three-part series, I've got Anthony Burgess, Managing Partner at Veritas Asset Management, joining us again all the way from London. Ant, welcome back.
Thanks very much, Anil. Nice to see you again.
Brilliant. And the last time we chatted, we kind of ended off on the topic of electric vehicles. And I just thought it was interesting that whether it's kind of electric vehicles or the normal internal combustion type of engines, they all need semiconductor technology to work. And I wanted to ask you about, you know, the very, let's say, hot debate between Samsung versus TSMC. And what are your thoughts on investing in these two companies, please?
Yeah, so I mean, as you know, we look for quality companies, so companies that have a high return on capital, highly cash generative, hard to compete against. And those companies do have those characteristics. They're slightly more cyclical than the kind of names that we would normally buy, because you get inventories ebbing and flowing within the semiconductor space. You obviously, you know, we went through a period 18 months ago where, you know, you couldn't buy a microchip, and the lead time for actually obtaining a delivery of microchips had gone up fivefold, and that had an impact on supply chains and delivery. But then, you know, as things slow down, the inventories build up, share prices come off, and occasionally, usually that's the right place to buy a TSMC, for example, which we do have on the universe list. I think we would probably prefer as an investment on chip companies. You know, Samsung makes its own products. TSMC doesn't. It's a pure foundry. So, you know, a company like Apple would prefer to use TSMC than go to Samsung that, you know, makes a competing product, for example. But that doesn't necessarily rule it out. And it does have one advantage at the moment, of course, which is maybe less political risk. So we were actually going to buy TSMC at the end of last year. The price was right. It looked, you know, very good value. It is a good quality name. But we just couldn't get over that hurdle of geopolitical risk. You know, we don't have, I hasten to add, a central view that China invades Taiwan. But it is a kind of binary type situation and too much of a risk, particularly as opportunity is opening up more broadly. But the answer to your question is that we do actually think those are good companies. You know, Korea is opening up a little bit in terms of corporate governance and having less cross-holdings between companies, which Samsung was very, you know, guilty of. So there could be an uplift in valuation at some point.
Thanks, Ant. And maybe just shift the kind of focus a bit on a company that has just gone through quite a big merger process. That's Canadian Pacific Kansas City Railway. How would you say they're revolutionizing transportation of goods and services across North America?
Yeah, I think railroads look very interesting to us because, you know, they are a good beneficiary of the decarbonizing trend, and probably not an obvious example. So, you know, people might think about electric vehicles and that type of thing as a more obvious place to look. But Canadian Pacific is one of two Canadian railroads that goes across Canada into North America. The other one's Canadian National, which is bigger. And they both contested to buy Kansas City Southern. And in the end, Canadian Pacific was the victor because it's the smaller of the two. And it was deemed in the regulators' eyes that it wouldn't affect competition, because despite the two of them getting together, it doesn't change the pecking order of sizes of North American railroads. The reason why we're excited by Canadian Pacific, I think, is for a number of reasons. One, a couple of years ago, there was a trade agreement between Canada, US, and Mexico, and now they, with Kansas Southern, Canadian Pacific has a network that covers all three. And the importance of that is that up until now, some of the goods and services coming from Mexico had no choice but to go on road. Rail is four times more energy efficient and it's more cost effective. And so they're already winning orders to move those trucks onto rail and take trucks off. It's estimated that once it's up and running fully, 64,000 trucks will be taken off the road, which is, you know, win-win. The other thing, of course, is with the trade dispute between the US and China, there's been quite a lot of onshoring to improve supply chains back to North America. And again, having that network will be beneficial. So we think the company is in a really good position and plays to a lot of enduring trends.
Thanks, Ant. I wanted to ask you now about a sector which is quite a big component of the portfolio, healthcare specifically. And what would you say are some of the latest trends now in gene therapy and gene mapping?
Yeah, this is a real growth area and quite interesting because I did genetics way back, crikey, in the 80s, showing my age. And we were all very excited about genetics at the time. And it's really only now that the things that we were kind of talking about then are coming to fruition. So, you know, gene therapy, just to remind you, is effectively replacing a faulty gene. So if you've got type 1 diabetes, you effectively have a defect gene which isn't coding for insulin, so you can't produce your own insulin, and that's why you have to take insulin injections. Gene therapy is basically using a similar technology that they use behind COVID vaccines to introduce an effective gene into the body. You would have to take some daily medication to effectively keep that gene switched on, but then the body will be able to produce its own insulin. So that's kind of the direction of travel, and it's becoming easier with genetic. Human genome mapping is becoming cheaper. You know, it was millions of dollars when the first breakthrough was made. Today, you can map a human genome for $200. It was $600 18 months ago. So the price keeps coming down, and of course, that opens up applications to develop the new drugs for unmedical conditions. And with patent cliffs at pharmaceutical companies that have to reinvent themselves every 10 years by developing new drugs, you know, that's the sort of drugs that they're going to want to develop. So it's quite the place you want to be is in the infrastructure behind those companies. We think that's a very interesting area for the next few years.
And so your team obviously speak to a lot of CEOs right around the world, but if you were a CEO of a healthcare company in the US right now, what would you say are some of the biggest things keeping you up at night?
Well, I suppose the best example I would give is if you have a company that operates a PBM. So PBM, a pharmacy benefit manager, is a company that controls drug pricing on behalf of their health plan clients. So if you're, I don't know, Microsoft and you want somebody to manage your healthcare plan, you would go to one of these companies with a PBM and they would help construct a list of drugs that all of your employees would have to choose their drugs from. So if you've got diabetes and there's a diabetes drug on there, what a PBM would do is go to the people or the manufacturers of diabetes drugs and say, look, you know, if you want to come on our list, you've got to lower your price. And in return, you know, we've got these 60 different corporate customers, including, you know, Microsoft and others, and we can give you volume. So there's an incentive for them to cut those prices. So they're very effective in cutting the price. Where that's been contested is there's always been a bit of transparency if that's not great. So no one really knows how much the PBM is holding on to, how much they're passing on. And because healthcare costs are so great in the States, anybody on medication, you know, the average of somebody taking medication is four medications, four prescription drugs per person. So they're desperately trying to lower the costs. And there is this concern that both sides, Republicans and Democrats, want to take greater control of, direct control of drug pricing, and that would impact a PBM. So you probably don't want to have companies that are too exposed to the PBM markets going into that election cycle.
Thanks, Ant. And I guess just the last thing I wanted to ask you about today is just if you look at the wine and spirits industry, you've got some brands out there that are centuries old and yet still going strong. I mean, what do you make of this? I mean, if you don't call that quality, then what is quality?
No, absolutely. I mean, we recently bought Diageo, and that was part of the thesis. You know, Diageo owns Guinness. Guinness has been going since the 18th century. In fact, it still operates out of, in Dublin, St. James's Gate, where it started. And Mr. Guinness actually bought a 9,000-year lease. And I think they're, you know, what is it, 300 years into that. So they're probably going nowhere for a long time. But, you know, they've got other brands, you know, like Johnny Walker, that's been going since the early 1800s. You know, they've got a stake in Moët Hennessy, so champagne. You know, they bought Don Julio, the tequila brand, Casamigos. So, and those are, there's a couple of trends that are happening that we think are quite exciting. I mean, the first, which to your point, is those brands have been going for a long time. They're going nowhere. You know, are they going to be here in 100 years' time? Yes, Guinness will be. So that's a tick in the box. But the other thing is, you know, people are increasingly buying spirits, moving from beer to spirits. And spirits are higher margin. You know, you've got things like the maturing of whiskey. So it's a premium product. So, you know, spirits as an industry is only growing at 1-2% per annum. But Diageo in that space is growing at 4-5% and it's higher margin. So they're in that sweet spot. As wealth increases, people want to premiumize to better products. But unlike an Hermes scarf, which is always expensive, and it could be impacted by a slowdown, with spirits, you've got the choice of drinking at home or out of home because of the price differential. So you can still afford to have that brand, but you might just choose where to drink it. So, you know, it's affordable luxury, if you like. And, you know, their one big beer brand, despite the fact there's a slowdown in beer overall, is Guinness. And, you know, that's been growing strongly. In fact, I was interested to see that it's, you know, Nigeria is one of its biggest markets. I think the second biggest outside of Dublin. But it's quite a popular drink in large parts of Africa. And people, you know, as wealth increases, want to move to that brand. So, yeah, we're quite excited by that drinks brand.
And thank you very much. We really enjoyed having you with us here in studio and in Cape Town. Hope you have a safe flight back home to London.
Thanks very much. I'm going to go and have one of Diageo's drinks now.
Brilliant. Enjoy.
Thanks.
Ned Group Collective Investments is an authorised collective investments scheme manager in terms of the Collective Investments Schemes Control Act. Ned Group Investments does not provide advice on financial products and will only give you factual information. For further details on our funds and to view our terms and conditions, please visit netgroupinvestments.co.za. Ned Group Investments, see money differently.